This is the 44th Derech Hashem class, and we're learning about prophecy. We're in the middle of section 3, chapter 3, and we did 1 through 4 last time. We'll start off with number 4 in the middle and hopefully finish this chapter. But before we go into it, as we're moving towards Pesach, I just want to share one thought. So I was learning a little bit of Az Yashir, Shirat Hayam, that we say in Pesukei de Zimra. And there's such an interesting thought there. First of all, just how it's arranged in the Torah scroll, the way that it's written is different than all the other lines, right? Everything else is written in straight columns, and this is written sort of like bricks, with the lines laid. It's hard to explain, but I think you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
You've seen what it
mm-hmm.
looks like? Yeah. So it's supposed to look like the split sea with the Jews walking through. So if you look at it again, see if you see that. But with a split and then a middle. So I was learning that that the Jews, as they walked through on dry land with the ocean closing behind them, so clearly it's not just a natural phenomenon that the ocean opened up and then they would be walking through on muddy sand, right, that would be hard to walk through with everybody. But it was dry, first of all. And second of all, as it was opening before them, it was closing behind them so that the Mitzrim would be drowned. The dry land in the middle is a special concept for the Jew. And if you look at the very last pasuk in your Siddur or in a Chumash and you see it separated out, the very last pasuk has the word Hayam and Hayam on each side. So you have the ocean on each side and the Jews walking in dry land right in the middle, it says. So what is that walking in dry land? So I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to remember where I saw this. I think it's Rav Hirsch that points out, or it could be Esther Wien, that I listened to a shiur of hers on it, that there's really no place for the Jew in this world. You know, we're kicked out of every single nation. Nobody wants us. We don't blend in with any people. So there's really no spot for us on the planet. But Hashem made a spot for us. He opened up the ocean and he made it dry land that we could live in, where we are safe and surrounded by the walls of the ocean, living inside Hashem's loving embrace, being carefully taken care of there. So I was speaking about this at in a modern Orthodox school, a group of women who are very Zionistic. So one of them said, you know, what about Israel? Isn't that our place on the planet? Yeah. And the truth is, no, it's not. And this is Rav Hirsch. She says, actually, Israel is Hashem's place on the planet. We're his tool there. But if you look at Israel, certainly if you look at it today, Jews aren't safe there, and they never really were. It's always been a fight to have that piece of land. We've always struggled to claim it as our own and to live there and to dwell amongst, next to, without, with the inhabitants that are also there. It's always been a struggle for us. So unlike the current narrative, certainly in the modern Orthodox world or in the general non-Haredi Jewish world, or even in the political world, that, you know, post-Holocaust, the Jews needed their own place, and so they have Israel now, so that they, if they're chased out of any other country, they have a place to go. Or, unlike how Herzl felt, who created modern Zionism, that, you know, if the Jews will just be, if they could just be normal, you know, just have their own land, their own army, their own government, and then they won't be chased from place to place. They'll be a normal people living amongst the nations as a normal nation. And that didn't work out so well either. We're still not normal. Even though we do have our own government and our own land and our own army, it's not. It's still a struggle on a daily basis. You know, is it ours? We have to really understand that the land of Israel is only there for us to be Hashem's kli, to spread his light to the world, right, for Hashem to work through us. So when the people of Hashem are living in the land of Hashem with the law of Hashem all together, that's when we create a bright light that shines in. But right now, we're just living in the land as if we're trying to be normal, rather than being Hashem's people in Hashem's land, doing Hashem's word. So, but it's just interesting to think about walking on the dry land in the middle of the ocean. That's the spot that Hashem made for us. And then also to think that where do the Arabs want us right now? They want to drive us into the sea. But Hashem will be there to catch us. You know, there is a space for us. And it's really with Hashem. If it's in the middle of the ocean, so it'll open up and it'll be dry land for us. But there's a space for us, but it's inside Hashem. It's not really a spot. And we don't have a normal spot on earth. Just the spot that Hashem made for us. So that's something to think about as we're going towards Pesach. Like, where is our dwelling place, living inside Hashem? I guess I could extend it one drop, and then that segues us into prophecy. You know, the concept, which I'm sure I've mentioned before, that Hashem is everything, Ein Od Milvado. And in order to create space for us to live in the world, he had to actually get himself out of the way, the Kabbalistic concept of tzimtzum, of contraction, to create space inside Hashem for this world to exist. So Hashem got himself, so to speak, physically out of the way so that there could be physical space for the world to exist. And he also got his rut zone out of the way so that there'd be space for our will to exist, so we could have free will, so we wouldn't be overwhelmed by Hashem's will. So, and then, in order to be like Hashem, we're supposed to do what Hashem does, the halachta bedrachav. So if Hashem got out of the way for us to live inside him, we're supposed to get out of the way for Hashem to live inside us. So that means getting our ego out of the way and getting our rut zone out of the way, just like Hashem did, to create space for Hashem to live inside us. Right? And the way that we do that is through the physical, the asuli mikdash, the shechanti betochem. Right? You engage in the physical process of building me a mikdash, and then I can live inside you, not inside it, but inside you, because you've done the physical thing. So I'm thinking about getting ready for Pesach. You know, there's all this physical work to be done. And you might wonder, I've wondered before, like, how am I supposed to, like, create Seder? I'm supposed to be like Hashem and create Seder now so that we'll have Seder night. Everything will be Mesudar. And I'm trying to, like, get the ego out, you know, just like the chametz, remove that from my life. How am I supposed to work on that when there's so much work to be done? And it took me years to realize that it's not Elul, it's Nisan. And this is not the month of spiritual avoda from Cheshbon HaNefesh perspective or from meditative perspective. Nisan is the time, even though we're still in Adar, but this Erev Pesach month is the time of working on ourselves through the physical, right? Just opening that gate and saying, okay, by sweeping, by wiping, by checking, by you know, opening this drawer, looking inside, or lining this cabinet. That's how I get rid of my ego. By just saying, you know what, I'm getting my will out of the way and I'm doing yours, and then come live inside me. Mm-hmm. So it is a lifelong process to constantly work with that and rework with that. And that does take us, I think, into Nevuah, that, as we'll see in just a minute, it's a long process to learn how to be a Navi. It's not something that's bestowed just like that, or somebody wants to, or somebody davens for it, or if it just comes. Even when Hashem gives it to somebody who's not looking for it, they still have to develop into it, as we'll see. Mm-hmm. So let's start in the middle of paragraph 4, which is where I think we left off at the end, but we'll still start there.
Just one question about the safety bit. Why weren't we given a place to be safe, just generally? Like, is it only for the time when Mashiach comes?
Isn't that a good question? Because safety is not it. If you think about it, it's a fascinating concept. Because here we're living in the world. When we say, V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol vavacha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha, right? We understand when we say b'chol nafshecha, that we are trying to be ready to die al kiddush Hashem, should we be required or requested to do so. Not an easy thing to think about loving Hashem with your whole nefesh, that you're willing to give it up, right? But the concept of being willing to give it up seems so difficult, especially when we have a key principle in halacha that v'chai behem, right? And b'kuach nefesh. So you can break Shabbos. You can do almost anything, not quite anything. You can break almost any mitzvah in order to save a life, right? Except for the big three. So So we do have this juxtaposition of life is extremely important and we value it highly, and we understand that there's something more important than life, which is connection to Hashem. Which is why if you're asked for Gilui Arayos or Avodah Zarah or Shvi Chasdamim, those three things, we understand that engaging in one of those three things would disconnect us from Hashem to such an extent that it's not worth being alive. Connection is much more important than engaging in those. So, and then connection to Hashem is more important than being alive through the engagement in those. So if we understand there's something more important than being alive, something more important than being safe, is doing the Ratzon Hashem. And so really, what's the Ratzon Hashem? It's not just doing the Ratzon Hashem. It's not that he's just a taskmaster and he just wants to see how far can I make these people go and what will they do for me. That's not it at all, but rather our job is to live in a way that we proclaim Hashem's oneness in everything that we do, in our life, in our death, in our national lives, in our community lives. Everything that we do is supposed to show that Hashem is one. So we've been tasked with a difficult task to show the world this, and we're still working on it. We're still working on understanding it ourselves. But it's interesting, during Megillas Esther, that's during that story, is when we apparently, mystically, agreed as a people to bear the difficult exile that we were headed into. I mean, we're just leaving an exile at the end of Megillas Esther, but then the second base of Mikdash, and then this exile that we're in now, that would be so difficult and so bloody. But it's only through the blood, B'demayich Chayi, right, through all that blood that was shed, all that Jewish blood, it's only through that that we can look back now and say, we're a miraculous people. There's no way that we should be in existence right now. It doesn't make any sense at all that a people that's been so chased and so beaten and so burned for 2,000 years without a central land, without a central authority. We didn't even have a pope. You know, forget about the Catholics are all upset. They don't have a pope right now. We didn't have that. You know, forget about a land or a government or a space to call our own. We didn't have any central authority, nothing that kept us together except the Torah and our Emunah and Hashem. So that doesn't make actual sense in terms of how the world works and how nations work. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to the Tibetans in a few hundred years. Will they still identify as Tibetans outside of their land and without any central authority? They still have the Dalai Lama, even though they don't have a land. You know, but the Jews for 2,000 years. So it's only through all that blood and all that torture that you can look back and say, it's just as miraculous that we're here today as it is that we got to the other side of the sea.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So it is difficult, but the safety is not... Safety in this world, this is a low level, and we're really headed towards Olam Haba, or B'nai Olam Haba. This is just the prose door. So there can be a lot of uncomfortable parts here. There's no question about it. A lot of extremely painful parts here. And I think that's what's so hard. I spoke to somebody who actually knew the young man who was in that couple that died Motzei Shabbos. And she was having a very hard time with it. And she said he's in the same class as her son. And she went to their wedding. And, you know, everybody was expecting the baby. And, you know, and then the baby survived for a day and a half and then died. And she's just broken. She's just like, I can, you know, I'm making supper, I'm taking care of the children, but like she said, it's so hard to like see Hashem in the darkness, which it is. You know, I mean, we can krechts from far away and we don't know them, so we just think, oh my gosh, that's so sad, a 21-year-old mm-hmm. couple, and you know, and it's sad, but it's not the same when you know them, you know, when they're your neighbors or they're your friend's child, then it's much sadder. So it is hard to see what Hashem wants from us and that there isn't safety, whether you're in Israel, whether you're in Brooklyn, whether you're sleeping in your bed. you know, there's not that safety. But it's not, I mean, I think that one key to Emuna is to understand that it's not about safety. You know, it's not, it's nice if we have a pleasant life, or pleasant times in our life, but that's not the ikar here. The ikar here, our real tachlis, is to proclaim through our lives that, that there is a God, that he runs the world, and that that everybody should have a relationship with him, and that ultimately it is good. So so we're holding on as Jews. You know, sometimes, you know, through thick and through thin, we're still Jewish, and we're still there, and we're still the messenger to the world. So much so that the Christians have theology about us. Not every Christian group, because you can't say the Christians ever. They're not one group. But there certainly are chunks of Christians, and I think it's the Catholics, but I'm not sure which brand of Christianity. But there are swaths of Christians who believe, who see that the Jews are chosen for punishment. Right, so they've made that into their, they, that's the way they see it, is that the Jews are special, God's special people, too. They're God's special punching bag. And they made that into their theology, that, you know, clearly the Jews, you know, missed the boat, and that's why they're not Christian. And but God keeps them alive. You see, they would almost die so many times, but God keeps them alive just to show the world how you suffer if you reject it. You know, but that's what they think, you know, because they see that everybody recognizes, you can't not recognize that there's something weird about the Jews.
Right.
It, it doesn't make sense that we're still here. So besides the fact that we are still here, it is going to make sense shortly, Bezrat Hashem. Everybody's going to see, I mean, that our very existence is going to testify to Hashem's majesty.
Mm-hmm.
It does already. But it'll testify more loudly when people see it better, when they see it with more clarity. And hopefully that's just around the corner. But it's still, it takes clearer lenses to see that.
Right.
So, okay, so let's, does that answer that a little bit?
Yeah, kind of. I was just today in like a horrible area, and I felt so uncomfortable being Jewish, and it was like, I felt like I stuck out, and I've had experiences that were not nice. And it was just like, yeah, so why not? Let's have that dry space in between.
Right, right, right. It's really a strange thing, and especially today, you know, you were born, I'm born, certainly, at a time when Jews are safe.
Yeah.
At a time when there's a state. At a time when Jews are not ashamed to look Jewish in the streets. And certainly not, like, I mean, you're European, so it's a little bit different, but certainly in America, everybody can dress however they want and nobody fears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, but that's not the way the Jew has felt for the ages.
Yeah.
So it's hard for us to remember in this time of extreme comfort, financial security, you know, and governmental safety. It's, and basically you know that you could trust the police, basically, not 100%, but basically, you know, it's hard for us to remember that this is a very narrow sliver of Jewish history that most Jews never experienced.
Yeah.
You know, so most Jews lived in fear the way you felt in that neighborhood or walking past some people for most of their lives. You know, it's hard to imagine. And that's why we have a minhag not to learn Torah on December 25th at night, or sometimes even in the spring on Easter. Some Jews don't, because they couldn't leave the house on those dangerous days when the Christians might want to be after them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not, Baruch Hashem, it's not our experience. And we do have rising anti-Semitism now, but still it's not within our lifetime's experience to have, you know, that level of anti-Semitism. So we're used to being, so that little discomfort is a big discomfort for us.
Yeah.
You know, the same way not having air conditioning in the summer would be a discomfort for us. What do you mean I can't just control the temperature of my home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're so used to it. So, yeah, we're a generation that's all about comfort in many different ways.
Right.
So, Right, so I think working on seeing it. So let's just look at a text because it talks about different lenses. But I think, you know, even though this is about prophecy, we can translate it to ourselves a little bit as we consider the types of lenses that we look through and how we can shift those lenses. So let's look in the middle of paragraph 4. So just to review from last time, the main concept of true prophecy is therefore that a living person achieves such an attachment and bond with God.
Hold on
this
a second.
Isn't, yeah?
Sorry.
No problem. This in itself is certainly a very high degree of perfection. Besides this, however, so besides the attachment, it's also often accompanied by certain information and enlightenment. So remember we just said last time that the main thing of prophecy is the attachment. The secondary thing is the information. So not all prophecy is about the revelation of information, and not all revelation of information is published information. It might be just for that era. Through prophecy, one can gain knowledge of many lofty truths among God's hidden mysteries. These things are perceived very clearly, just like all knowledge gained through bestowed enlightenment, as discussed above. Prophecy, however, comes with a much greater force than divine inspiration, as we shall explain shortly. Okay, so that's where we're headed now. 5. The experience of prophecy must come about through intermediaries. Man cannot attach himself directly to God's glory or perceive it as one sees a man standing in front of him. The perception of God involved in true prophecy must therefore come about through God's servants, whose task it is to provide such a vision. These intermediaries then act as lenses through which one sees the glory. What a prophet actually perceives, however, is the glory itself and not something else. The way one sees it, however, depends on the particular intermediary involved, just as what one would see through a lens would depend on the particular type of lens. And here it gives the word so that you can just have that familiarity. It's called an aspaklaria. I'm not sure if that's Aramaic or if that's Greek. It's definitely not Hebrew.
Yeah,
but the word is used regularly in Hebrew, aspaklaria. So that's the lens, aspaklaria. There are therefore many degrees of perception depending on the lens involved. It may cause the subject to appear far away or very close. There can furthermore be various degrees of transparency or opaqueness in the lens itself. So just really thinking about lenses as a muscle for a few minutes. So there's varying degrees of sunglasses. You can have super dark glasses or just, you know, lightly blonde glasses, ones that block the UV rays or ones that don't, ones that are shiny like a mirror on the outside. You know, you see differently through each type of a lens. That's just in terms of the opaqueness. But then there's also how it magnifies or not, right? So have you ever looked through binoculars the other way?
Possibly.
Right? So if you look through binoculars the right way, then what's far away appears near. But if you turn them around and look through them backwards, what's far away appears tiny, tiny, tiny.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So there's a joke about like how do you catch an elephant? Right. So you need a pair of binoculars, a tweezers, and a baby food jar. Right. So you take the binoculars, you turn them backwards, you look
mm-hmm.
through them, you use the tweezers, you pick up the elephant, and you put it in the baby food jar. So that's about the lens that you're using. Depending on the lens, things look different. So there is a process in being able to move through different lenses or train oneself to see differently, and also a process of connection to Hashem where different intermediaries will be the vehicle of the vision of God's glory. So last time did I talk about the shining of Moshe's face? I can't remember. Shined. He had a hadras panim that came from when he asked, Hareni na et kvodecha. Show me your glory. Right? So Moshe asked, please, Hashem, show me your glory. Now, obviously, Moshe had seen Hashem's glory just like we all did at the splitting of the sea and during the plagues and at the burning bush and all kinds of places. So he's asking clearly for something in addition to that that he hasn't yet received. Right? Show me your kavod. So Hashem's answer is, stand here in this rock next to me, whatever that means, next to me, and you can see my back but not my front. Right? Whatever that means. So we understand back, not my front, means you can see the results of my presence in the world, but you can't see me.
Yeah.
Nobody could see me and live, but you could see the results of my existence in the world. That's my back. But there's a strange thing where as Hashem passes by, again, we're not going to go into whatever that means, how could Hashem pass by, but as Hashem passes by, it says in the pasuk that he uses his hand to cover Moshe's face. And it's from the covering of his face that Moshe's face becomes radiant. So Rashi points out that the radiance, the shine on Hashem's, on Moshe's face comes from not seeing Hashem, not from seeing Hashem. Because Hashem covered his face as he passed by. Right? So the radiance comes from not seeing Hashem. It comes from being in relationship with Hashem in a space where he can't see him. Which is where we all are, right? In a relation, we are trying to create a relationship with Hashem in our lives where we can't see Hashem. But the Hadras Panim comes from really seeing Hashem without being able to see Hashem, which is what Moshe got,
right?
Being able to really see Hashem without being able to see him. So that's a thought for Megillas Esther that really... The Hester Panim of Esther, the story of Esther, of Hashem being hidden, seeing Hashem in the hiddenness is what reveals the light that we're after, understanding that Hashem is right there. So that's the, as we develop ourselves in that, on that path of hopefully elevation to see Hashem more clearly and more clearly, that's how we get that radiance, that's how we shift the lenses. Okay, let's go a little further in the text. 6. When God reveals himself and bestows his influence, a prophet is greatly overwhelmed. His body and all his limbs immediately begin to tremble, and he feels as if he's being turned inside out. So he loses control of his body. If you think about who we are as body and soul, physical and spiritual, only living together by nais, you know, which is what we say when we say Asher Yetzaru, Maflila Asot, right? The Pella that's being done, Maflila Asot, is that body and soul can live together when they're diametric opposites. But when the soul is able to cling to Hashem so clearly that it can receive prophecy, the body has to be disabled for that to happen. So his body does go limp for that. This, however, is the nature of the physical. It cannot tolerate the revelation of the spiritual. And this is particularly true when it consists of the revelation of God's own glory. The prophet's senses cease to operate, and his mental faculties can no longer function independently. They have all become dependent on God and the influx that's being bestowed. As a result of this attachment of the soul, it gains a degree of enlightenment completely beyond the powers of human reason. This enlightenment does not come to it because of its own nature, but as a consequence of the fact that the highest root is bound to it. The soul therefore perceives things in a much higher manner than it could ever attain by itself. So really, this is that you work towards something and then the end is the gift of Hashem. You can't achieve this on your own. You can work towards it, but it's not about the nature of the soul, and it's not about what you've accomplished necessarily. It's just that you have to put in your effort, and then Hashem can swoop in, and you're connected, and then you can achieve this. But you don't achieve it. Hashem achieves it for you.
Right.
One who attained the level...
Sorry.
Pardon? Go on.
Is it true that prophecy you can only get in Israel?
I think so, and we certainly learned that from Sefer Yonah, that he tried to, you know, abandon his prophetic state by leaving the land of Israel. So I don't remember it saying that here. I guess I'll have to see that as we go on. I'll look that up. Because just as we talked about earlier, you know, there's that convergence of the people of Hashem in the land of Hashem with the law of Hashem. And it's those three things that work together to reveal Hashem. It's possible that also in a similar way that you have to be in the land of Israel to work with the energy that's there in order to achieve. I don't remember it saying the Dar Hashem, but I'll look further and hopefully answer you next time. One who has attained the level of prophecy is on a higher level than one who has attained the level of divine inspiration, which you can't get anywhere, even with respect to his grasp of knowledge. This is so because prophecy brings man the greatest degree of enlightenment that is possible for him. Because when he's attained prophecy, he has attained the highest possible level of attachment to God himself. The revelation of God's glory is what gives rise to all that is contained in a prophetic experience. The revelation working upon the power of imagination in the prophet's soul, leading to images of the concepts forced upon it by the power of the revelation. The imagination, however, does not initiate anything on its own. So the Hashem's glory comes through and then causes the imagination to, in a way, receive what's being impressed upon it. But it doesn't come from imagination up. It comes down into the imagination. Let's just finish up here. These images, in turn, convey to the prophet ideas and information whose conception comes from the power of the revealed glory. The subject remains fixed in the prophet's mind, and when he returns to his normal state, this knowledge is retained with perfect clarity. So unlike in a dream, where you might see something that seems so real, and then you wake up and you have a hard time recalling it. You're trying to tell your husband what you saw or a friend, you know, what it was, and the details start to get blurry. That's not what happens with prophecy. The images do come in through the kli of your imagination, but then they are there. You don't forget them, and you have total clarity about what you saw. When your body returns to its functioning, you totally retain everything that you got during the prophetic experience. This is the idea of prophecy in general. There are many degrees, however, as we shall discuss presently. The highest level of all was that of Moshe, regarding whom the Torah testifies, there will never again arise a prophet in Israel like Moshe, who knew God face to face. So, Bezrat Hashem, next time, which we'll see if we get to, but we should try again for next week if we can, and then probably we could have a Pesach break. But we'll start to see the different levels of prophecy and what it looks like. And actually, it's a good time here of Pesach to learn more about Moshe and his prophecy. All right, so the next chapter is the prophetic experience.
Right.
So, Bezrat Hashem. Should we plan for next week?
Yeah, I'm happy to.
Okay, if it works. Great.
Just
same
one
time
question.
Next week.
Does that mean that when they lose their senses, they're asleep?
So, not usually. It's possible because there's different levels of prophecy. So it's possible you can get it through sleep, and that would be a lower level of prophecy. Let's say Yosef with his dreams. Then there's like more of sort of like in a way like an epileptic seizure, where you lose control of your body, but you're not asleep, but you can't function.
Mm-hmm.
So a trance or a loss of control of. But sort of like what it feels like in a dream. You know, sometimes in a dream you're being chased and you try to run, but your body just doesn't go. I think it might be like that, where your body is deactivated, where you're like unhooked from ability to use your body so that your soul can be more hooked to God, but that they don't separate. Because you don't want it to separate. I think there are prophetic experiences that cause a separation, which is death, of course.
Right.
So, that's what it talks about when the four went into Pardes. So one of them died. It was such an experience of connection with Hashem that he left his body. So that's not what we want to accomplish in this world. But for those who do achieve the prophetic experience, they want to accomplish a strong level of dvekus, a root of Hashem. Without leaving their bodies, but their bodies have to be disabled in order for that to happen. And that, as we'll see as we go forward, that was the principal difference between all other Nevi'im and Moshe. Mm-hmm. Moshe was still was able to have a prophetic experience with his body still intact.
Mm. Interesting.
So, yeah, lots of interesting things to learn.
Yeah.
So,
that's not
good.
The
okay.
We usually talk about. Next week, can we do it a half an hour earlier?
Sure. Yeah, let's aim for that. No problem. We could do it an hour earlier if you want. Is that easier for you? Or just that?
Depends when my daughter goes to sleep. Okay, so say 9:30 my time, which would be 2:30 your time.
2:30 my time. Okay, great.
Brilliant.
Okay, we'll plan for that.
Looking forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Talk to you. Okay.
Bye-bye.